an interview with Charles Wagner at his home in Fairfax Station outside of Washington, April 28th, 88. Charlie, this is a very fine set of answers that you have written out to the questions that I sent you. I think that the principal gap in our information thus far is in the area of facilities planning and construction. Where did the initiative come from for each of the buildings? What was the nature of the pipeline and how did it operate? And how much facilitating did you receive from the central office and the Bureau of the Budget and the construction fund? Now, you've mentioned Elwin Stevens, Mort Gassman, Adenalfi, who is no longer with us, Frank Matsky. Can you tell me what the functions of each of those four individuals were and how you dealt with them? You can start either with the persons or you can start with the program of planning and development. Suit yourself.
Well, let's deal with the persons. Elwin Stevens, when I arrived, was the university architect for the whole state University of New York. And our contact was basically through Steve.
Okay, fine.
Mort Gassman was, you might say, was the director of planning or facilities planning. He handled the program and planning. And
in the central office.
In the central office. And they both served under Larry Murray at that time. Each one of these, Stevens had an entourage of architects that worked with directly under him, and Mort Gassman had people that were involved in program, more in the programming aspect, that worked for him, such as Marty Phillips, and another name I recall was Mike Rivera. But basically, the contact was with Steve. And you have to understand, when I came, Steve wanted to run a tight ship. In other words, as Alec Pond would put it, they were acting like absentee landlords. That they wanted to control, they wanted to say what we would build. They wanted to say how we would do it. And coming from West Virginia, where I had no hierarchy in the whole state, it was difficult for me to understand this procedure at first. And needless to say, I got my knuckles wrapped a few times by Steve's office for doing things somewhat unilaterally. However, they gave Stony Brook a lot of space to work with. In that, I mean that they let us do a lot of the controlling. Subsequent, kind of a power struggle between the fund and the State University Central Administration, and the fund started taking over many of these functions, and ultimately Mort Gassman and Stevens both became members of the construction fund. I guess it was a power struggle between Tony Adenalfi and Steve. I held both of the gentlemen in high regard. Mort Gassman I worked with much closer on developing the programs, and I always thought of him as a really fine architect and a good guy to work with.
Do you know where he is now?
He's retired.
I know that. Somebody told me he was on Cape Cod.
I believe he was where he is. He was a real, real bright architect, having gone to Cranbrook, which it's unusual for Americans. Very few were selected to go to Cranbrook, the school.
Where is that?
It's in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. It originally was really run by Eliel Saarinen, Ariel Saarinen's father. It was founded primarily for the arts. It had world-famous contemporary sculptors, painters, music, and it's quite a place to see. But it's he had gone there to school. I think his first schooling was South Dakota or some place out there. And, but he was a brilliant guy. The initiative for things, when I came, it was originally the ideas for what, well, prior to my coming, the initiative for what kind of facility for that came from the campus. And very early in my going there, Mort Gassman came down with Mike Rivera to sit down and write a program for, I believe it was a science lecture center. So at that point in time, they wanted to do the programming, write the programs. Subsequently, and with their blessing, we wrote the programs. The initiative coming, you know, besides the initiative, the more detail is what the desires were now coming out of the campus as opposed to coming out of Central University. One event that I recall quite vividly was, I think it was about December of 1967. It was mid-December, and I was summoned down to Dr. Toll's office, and Mort Gassman was on the phone with him. And you know how Johnny tended to broadcast his phone calls, and he had me hear what Mort was saying. And the message was that we want a compendium of programs for all the facilities that you require to meet your master planning goal. And he said, we need it on January 12th. He said, don't tell Charlie yet. He said, because it might ruin his Christmas. And I was standing there listening to the whole thing. Well, we set about the task, and what we actually did was to write an outline program and some in more detail for every facility that was planned to meet the FD enrollment of 17,500 students in all our facilities for the year 1975.
Where did you get the ideas for the program? How did you
get... We sat down and Alex Pond, Bill Moran, Johnny, and myself. And
did you consult the department chairman?
Yes. What happened was Alec called in every department chairman, and based upon the studies that Bill Moran did, what our space should be by discipline, by cohort, the whole drill. We had what the square footage should be for that discipline. The department chairman, or in instances of engineering, the dean, Tom Irvine, they were called in. and said, well, this is how much space you generate with the master plan as we see the numbers. First, do you agree with the numbers for your development, basically the numbers of the students by cohort, etc.? Of that space, so much of it is boilerplate. There's things that so many faculty, and that generates so many offices, and the clerical is support, somewhat of a ratio of 1-7, other things that are boilerplate to that. This is what you get there. There is this other residual of space that you're entitled to. How do you want that divided? What types of research laboratories, support facilities, that type of thing? And I must say that the department chairmen were most cooperative. Mind you, this is mid-December with Christmas and vacation or intercession coming up. And we generated the thing, put it together, a nice bound copy. This was before the day that we had the computer that we do the work on today. And word processing would be, would have been so much easier in producing the material. And I delivered the thing to Mort Gassman's office. I think it was 2 days before the deadline, and he was absolutely shocked. And that's when I told him, Mort, I heard your telephone call. really, you might say this is, the generation of telling. The planning group in Albany, this is really what we want. The physics, though, the physics and chemistry buildings were really, those programs were written prior to my arrival, and I think biology, graduate biology, a lot of that was done by Misty Fogg, kept on for the summer. But the rest of it was what was generated out of the campus. And when we had to do a project, if we were going to go for a project, we had the outline or even more detail, so it became somewhat easier to develop the facility program. That's not to say we didn't revisit it and go back to the user. That's what they call it here, the user, to see what they want. It was always important that we found out, the needs of the department. I don't think that, the planner can put his mark of the imprimatur on the research things. We have a difference of opinion here. We get put in a catch-22. You're not supposed to talk to the user. And then when the user talks to the president, then he gets mad because you didn't talk to the user. And so, but here it was clearly, we had to find out. And Alec worked very diligently on this, and it was just setting up one meeting after another, and getting these things resolved. Meanwhile, Bill Moran was cranking out the numbers. Somewhat playing the numbers game, the drive for space. How many students? What can we put with engineering because they get a bigger guideline? That was, and so things like mathematics might be lumped in with engineering, so you get more guideline space, and consequently more space for the campus. So it was a constant massaging of the numbers. And those programs, the fine arts buildings, came out of that program, social behavioral sciences, library.
How was it that no building for the humanities ever developed? You have the humanities now in about 5 different places. They have the English is in the old humanities building. The languages are in the library. Philosophy is in old physics. And religion is now in old chemistry.
That, I would say, It probably came around about because there was a humanities was planned. The campus is divided a sector approach in the master plan, and we didn't, you know, we had it laid out that there'd be a humanities and fine arts sector, and we built, and part of that was, you know, going around the library. The original concept was a building, one was a building around the old humanities building like we did.
That you went around the library?
We went around the library. That was Tomas Pokorny's concept of hiding all the red brick buildings, I guess.
Yeah.
It worked with the library, but I'm not so sure it would work for that little two-story building. There was, and another concept was a tower. I participated in coming up with a conceptual scheme for building a tower that would be in that main plaza area that would be for the humanities. A couple of things happened. We programmed the library for its ultimate growth, which was a struggle to get it to the size that it was built on.
Struggle with whom?
I'd say it was a struggle with the state university and also with budget. That it was the time of Don Axelrod was the director of the executive division of the budget. At the same time that we were wanting to build a library, of course, Buffalo was planning their master planning approach, and they wanted a library, Binghamton, etc. And Axelrod and company had a study made as to, and participating in this was Marty Phillips and Mike Rivera from Gassman's outfit. We first, I believe, wanted to build a 2 million volume library or library system. That the library system, as we defined it, was the main library, physics, math library, chemistry library, earth and space science, and biological science.
What? Yeah.
So,
no social science, separate social science library.
No
library.
No, it was just as I defined it, that was the concept, and plus the health sciences library. We finally got an agreement, I think it was for 1.5 million volume library. And the approach to planning a library was very logical. You plan a library building or build it for, say, a 20-year life period. Needless to say, you have space within the structure. You utilize that space for interim space use. So all of a sudden, our library became titled Library/Humanities. And we provided the space for the humanities within the library.
You had the history department there for a while, or
yes.
some of them.
Correct. And the concept was, as the library grows, this was another kind of surge space, the library being the surge space.
Right.
But very rational, very, very rational approach to build the damn building to the size it should be for your master plan.
Yeah.
But put other people into it. And the proof of that was Firestone Library did this. Other institutions did it.
Firestone at Princeton.
At Princeton, right. And when I did my thesis, I did a library, and I learned things from that. But that's the approach to take. So we had the humanities then in the library.
Except for English,
right. One of the things we tried to avoid, like the plague, and it was a pet thing of John Toll's, is we build big buildings. We don't build buildings, small buildings with the name English building, history building on it. It, you know, you build a big building.
But you did that for the sciences.
We did that with the sciences, correct. We actually did that in a sense with the social and behavioral sciences building.
You grouped them, yes.
So we grouped them. Well, these disciplines were to grow. and the library was to grow. And as that growth happened, we would build a building for them. The other side of the coin is...
For the humanities.
For the humanities. The other side of the coin is, it was not the intent in our original concepts and master plan that old bio building, old chemistry, old physics would be used as they are apparently being used now to house humanities departments. The concepts and that had all been written up, that the old chemistry building was to be really still remain as chemistry, and the new building was to be addressed more graduate chemistry, and the old building was to in reality house undergraduate labs and office facilities. Similarly, old physics building was to serve as that function, and the old bio building would be turned over to that, or maybe an adjunct of biology, such as perhaps marine sciences, or something in that order. Now, when you don't follow through on that kind of a thing, you've got the space and you've got to use it. And so therefore, what always gets the butt end of everything on a campus is generally the humanities. Here at George Mason, we got the English department scattered hell and on in temporary structures. We had the mathematics department stretched, history department, and it's significant. We had them in the library vacant space such as we had at Stony Brook.
Is the top administrative staff at George Mason composed of scientists?
No. President is an English major, if you want to use that terminology. The academic vice president is a psychologist, psychology. Some of the other administrators were not academically oriented at all. Here it's difficult to get people to understand this kind of a concept. So I think what I can conceive of as being the reason. Each year we did a net area study. It was like a bed sheet of long matrix.
Total buildings or
and what we
individual
did,
buildings?
It was, every building was listed on the top of the matrix. All the existing buildings. The buildings under construction. Buildings in planning. Buildings in programming. And then we had a stretch out there called future. The square footage for every building was listed, the net assignable square footage. As you came down the matrix, you had all the academic things, the classrooms, laboratories, and then the departmental things, the biological sciences, chemistry, engineering, etc., etc. The very next column said, this is what your entitlement is under the master plan by FTE and by the cohort. This is the space your program generates.
The FTEs were guesswork.
They were, basically, they were at that point in time.
Yeah.
It was the best we could do and generate it with the growth pattern. And what you did on this matrix is you put in each building where these people were and how much square footage they had. Then below a line, what we call below the line, were the other items that make up the space bank of the university, organized activities, which takes in research, student activities, libraries fell below the line, the gymnasia, etc. And the bottom line is that everything's got to add up. Now that is the most valid method of planning a thing. The last net area study I participated in still showed something like about 72,000 square feet hanging out there as unprogrammed that would be or humanities space. I don't know, I haven't kept up with what the FTE growth rate is, and by particularly by discipline. So it's hard to say, but I'm conjecturing that's what happened. See, one thing that always remains in my craw is something that Johnny said to me once when we were going up or coming back from Albany, and he said, "You wonder why I keep fighting so hard for those four big buildings." This is very early. He said, "Of graduate chemistry, physics, biology, and the library." He said, "If I get those four buildings, I've got enough space to run an excellent university." So whatever you got over and above that was gravy. And he's right. If you sit down and think about it, he's absolutely right. And that was the push. And the push got it. Plus, we got the fine arts, which I think to get that was superb. And John fought for that as hard as he did for anything else.
Who kept you from getting a 1,500 seat auditorium?
That was a fight that I had with State University, with Marty Phillips. I had come off having built a 1,600-seat auditorium, or multi-purpose theater. That's what that is. Yeah. It's a multiple use, not multi-purpose. which my theater consultant says that's what you should build, and I agree. Marty and company based everything on the FTE enrollments in the departments of music, drama, etc. And he was also looking at a model that he was publishing or about to publish for what spaces campuses should have. And in his model it said from, I think, something like 12,001 FT to 20,000 FTE, or some figure, I forget the exact figures, that you should have a 1,200 seat theater. I said, but Marty, you know, when you get up to 20,000 FTE or 18,000 FTE, you can't add. It's the most ludicrous thing. You can't add on, you can't put 400 seats onto that theater and make it function right. And I...
What was his background?
Marty he had been the facility program coordinator for Potsdam, and okay. I guess involved in the physical plant at the same time. Now, I had him convinced that he would go with the 1,600 seat. However, it was a deal, a compromise. Drop out one of these rehearsal rooms. We had band rehearsal, choral rehearsal, orchestra rehearsal, that type of thing. He said, if you drop out one of those, because of the overall space, you can have that. I tried that on the departments. I talked first to Sid. Sid says, good idea. The music department, Billy Jim Layton, he didn't want to give up a square inch of space, let alone a rehearsal hall of 2,400 square feet. A theater, 1,600 seat is, according to George Eisenhower, the theater consultant, that's a good size space.
Yeah.
We're building one here for 2,000. I had to talk the president down from 3,500 here. 3,500 is ludicrous. I mean, you might as well take binoculars and go. But it should have been 1,600.
Sure, yeah.
And other people thought that it should be bigger, but you don't. Yeah. You can't make it too big because you lose the personal contact. You know. The idea of building something bigger so all students are that can, you know,
get together
is crazy. That's like designing a church for Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. and it sits vacant the rest of the time. You just increase the number of performances as opposed to... And I don't think they've ever had any problem in filling the 1,200 seats.
We have only 1,100.
Yeah.
And the theater, the main stage is what they call it, will accommodate a fairly good-sized orchestra, but it's very tight.
Well, the stage plus the stage lift, that's one of those stages that, we can
be added.
It has four different positions in elevation.
Yeah.
It's a lift stage that you could bring in up to full level and increase the thing. The concept was I wanted to be able to do full orchestral, full opera. Try to do everything except Mahler's Symphony for 1,000. And it's interesting, the technology has changed recently, somewhat. I have George Eisenhower on the project here. And I had George on the job at West Virginia University, which was 1,600 seats. But we never had a problem in, accommodating that. One other thing is the recital hall is for 400.
Yes.